Hello and welcome to the Hulkcast. As usual, I'm your host, James Rushton. Aston Villa, unfortunately, were defied by Fulham in the Championship playoff final at Wembley. That means promotion is a no-go for this season, at least. Once again, though, I'm delighted to be joined by Danny Raza. It's been a few weeks, mate. How are you getting on?
Your trip to Wembley.
The less said, the better, I think, is the best word. But you're all right? You're doing well?
You know what, right? End of the day, just to kind of like intro in this podcast, they say that the best thing that you can do when you're feeling miserable is not to bottle up your feelings. And we're releasing a bit of an open forum tonight where we will absolutely talk about this, despite the fact I think everybody's been sort of bottling it up. We've got to approach it all head on. To be honest, I was avoiding the topic at work today. If I remember correctly, people would come up to me, kind of like ask about Villa, and I was kind of saying, "Yeah, don't want to talk about it, not right now." But I'm feeling all right, James.
Well, I think we need to do a slight apology. I think we didn't cover the second leg of the playoffs and the Championship final. That's for a few reasons, personal reasons. I had a job interview, and less said about that, the better. But I think it's a really good thing that we actually didn't cover this because we were going to get ahead of ourselves. And, mate, what can we say? Like Championship playoff final, Fulham 1, Aston Villa 0. Let's get into the match. What is there to speak about in terms of positives from that 90 minutes?
Jack Grealish was okay, I guess. He played well. I think it was he was the only real player who seemed to be driving at Fulham and kind of like challenging them. Throughout the game, he was the only one who was positive at sort of trying to beat players and trying to get ahead of the defenders. A lot of the time, he was up there on his own. Got nothing against Lewis Grabban, but Lewis Grabban seemed to be tracking back more times than trying to get ahead of the defense. A lot of the times, Grealish seemed to be ahead of his ahead of everybody else during that game, proving once again why he is a big money player and why he's probably our most valuable asset.
Well, Fulham took the lead sort of early on for a Tom Kearney goal. They rejected a big bid for him from Newcastle earlier. I think it was at the start of the season in the summer. And it paid dividends, mate. They're a creative player. Snuck in through Alan Hutton and John Terry. And scored the pivotal goal because Fulham didn't really have a look in after that because the momentum would naturally swing to Villa, and Villa didn't make the most of it. But it's wasted game there.
I don't think I was insulting the players. I was very much sort of angry at the players for not seeming to put enough effort in on the day. But like, when you look at it, you talk about Fulham and them not really creating anything after the first goal. Fulham were poor. I mean, okay, I wouldn't say poor. Fulham were very, very average. They were bang average. They played no different to any other sort of mid-table championship team, right? Because they scored the goal and then stayed on the back foot for like the next 45 minutes. But the difference is when a team's on the back foot, right, most teams tried to come at you and tried to score. Now, Villa did that, but only in the second half. We should have punished them for how poor they were playing. And I mean, the amount of fouls they were committing on Jack Grealish, they were under pressure to some degree. But that first half was dire. It was absolutely dire. We just didn't create anything.
We punished for that thing that always happens is that Jack Grealish is our best player bar none. And he had an excellent game against Fulham. Nothing came off him except one dribble. And if he finished that chance and, you know, he had little right to do so. It was off balance, facing so many challenges, and shot just at the keeper, Bettinelli.
Yeah, but people
That would have been the best goal ever seen at that stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been a beautiful goal to see at Wembley. But people also forget that he did miss a one-on-one header with an open goal as well. Let's not pretend that there wasn't missed opportunities. There were plenty of opportunities where we did just cock up on, and the ball went flying over the bar when in any other game. It would have been buried. And the thing is, we were over reliant on Jack Grealish. And the thing is, there's this myth going along that we are over reliant on Jack Grealish in general, and we're not, because whatever happened to the form that Adoma was in when he banged in 11 goals? I don't know how many games it was, but he was banging in goals left, right, and centre. What happened to that? You know, what happened to Lewis Graben, who seems to get in anywhere and make a goal out of nothing? We're not a team full of, you know, we're not a team that is supposed to be carried by Jack Grealish. That's not what we are. It was simply that, you know, the bigger heads in that team did not turn up. I genuinely feel that way.
We'll come on to a bit about Jack Grealish later and carrying the team especially, because it could be a big factor going forward. But yeah, that match, Villa really did kick on in the second half. They didn't get the goal they needed. Expected goals, don't be fooled by Villa and Fulham very much equal in that statistic. But I think Villa really did have the lion's share of chances due to the fact that Fulham were sitting back and trying to hold on to a lead. So I wouldn't take much of, you know, account of that at all, because had we scored an equaliser, I don't think you'd have expected Fulham to sit back at all. I think you'd have seen them go at us again and possibly score for the exact same chance that they opened up. It's just simple through ball. They get in behind and don't rely on dribbling. They get in behind, and John Terry unfortunately seems like an easy man to get behind. Over, you know, the course of this season, it's either been the long ball over the top or a through ball that's done us on that side.
Yeah, and you know what? It was the whole defence that was at fault there. And I can't get my head around the fact that all of them went to sleep on it. I cannot get my head around it. It's the playoff final. It means so much to the fans. You know, the least you can expect from the players is to keep their heads up, you know, and to focus. And at the end of the day, we lost to a soft goal. It was a really, really soft goal. Terry watched that ball fly past him. Chester watched that ball fly past him. Alan Hutton, I don't know where he was, right? But Albert Adoma also watched that ball, you know, fly past him. And yeah, as I say, it was a mild goal. Fulham weren't that good. You know, Sessegnon was pretty much dead throughout the whole game. You know, Abdoulaye Kamara as well. I think genuinely Fulham's wingers did struggle for the most part of that game. There were a couple of opportunities that came through the centre. And it perplexes me that despite the fact that James Chester and John Terry have been so solid and brilliant for us all season, that they suddenly turn up to Wembley and absolutely forget how to defend.
Yeah, I think a collapse. I don't know if it was necessarily a collapse on the wing, but Fulham, they broke onto us like waves over rocks, mate. Mitrovic especially, able to just swing across the flanks of the pitch into the centre. Destructive force, and you know, you're looking at him and you're marking him. What are you going to do about the wingers, especially Sessegnon, whose trademark is, you know, going off the boil for 90 minutes of a game before popping up with a brilliant moment of skill or positioning. Positioning is his main thing. Forget his pace. It's his positioning. He's smart. He'll go in for a second ball or a second chance and score, and that's his game. So he's always a threat. But I'm just so disappointed. It come down to one game, mate, and it fell apart.
Almost knew it, though, didn't you? Like, you almost knew it.
Yeah.
Because, like, It seems to happen every time when we think that we've got something good coming ahead, right? The players have a different mentality to the other teams that would be in that situation, right? I understand that it's 50-50 when you get to the playoff final, right? But we did not make a game of it. We walked in as the nervous side, right? Straight away, right? You could see it, right? Our players were absolutely overawed by the occasion, despite the fact that they're going up against, you know, generally a bunch of kids who haven't, you know, had that experience at that top level. They all were like a serious bag of nerves. They almost seemed like they never had any belief that they were going to win. And we just got walked over. And it just seems to happen every time. It happened at Wembley when it was the FA Cup final. It happened in the League Cup final as well. We just seem to be so used to it. Now, I understand that's not down to these players, right? But, you know, these players have bottled it before. We bottled second place by thrashing the best team in the league, Wolverhampton Wanderers 4-1, by beating Cardiff City and then getting walked on by Bolton and QPR. We bottled it then. We bottled it again. We are genuinely becoming the Arsenal of the Championship.
Yeah, no, I can see exactly what you mean, mate. And Fulham, I guess you can say deserved victors. I think, you know, there's been a lot of criticism throughout their fans, mate, but we've spoken to a few. I think you talked to the Hammy End, the Fulham blog. I spoke to Russ Goldman of Cottage Talk, and, you know, both come off like very, very proud fans who have, you know, waited a long time for this, and it's come in a good way. And I can't take that away from them. As I said to you just before we started recording, again, Villa are the bad guys in someone else's fairy tale. And it's just, that's our role, mate, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we didn't inspire anybody this season, did we? I mean, we were playing well for a good amount of time. And I think a lot of people did want us to go up. But end of the day, you know, that end of season form, it came back to haunt us. Steve Bruce, for all that's positive about him, he's got a reputation of trying to shut teams off and being too solid. Our team, the players that we've got in there, are far better suited to driving forward and trying to be the team on top. End of the day, you know, as well as it worked against Middlesbrough, we looked like the boring side. Whereas Fulham are that young, exuberant side with drive to go forward you can almost say they're slightly lucky that they've got a talent in the sense of Ryan Sessegnon. But the rest of that side seems to work well with each other. And the thing is, James, right? I don't want to get drawn into this idea that Fulham are this amazing footballing side in comparison to us, because at points in the season we've been as good, if not better than them. When we're not a side that isn't capable of the same things as them. We just don't have the bottle and we don't have the mentality, and it's simply that. They have a positive mentality, Fulham, and they've been feel good for the whole season. They've treated the fans well, and their players, you know, they turn up and they look like they want to win every game.
No, it hurts, man. It really does. Because you look, you know, when that half of that stadium is full with Fulham fans, and 90 minutes blows, and the cheers, the applause, the rapturous scenes, you know, pyro going off in the stands and on the pitch. It was just, it's hard to recall, to be honest. And it's just football. That's a weird thing. It's just football. But you just think about all the optimism, all the nerves, and it's just gone. And that's a whole season summed up in 90 minutes. And nothing else matters. Not Robert Snodgrass's like last minute goal against Sheffield United. Not Jack Grealish dribbling across the pitch. Not Hourihan's goal against Blues. None of it actually matters in the big picture. I'm really thankful for the memories and everything. You know, it has been a fun season, but it would matter if you know we're coming into a new season now, and things are gonna happen. We'll come on to that in a minute, but things are gonna happen now where this isn't gonna be a positive. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be like that. There should be rules in place to actually allow us to be a football club and not this cost-cutting, you know, business run on a shoestring, because that's not right. This is not business. This is football.
But it seems like most people seem to think that we're, you know, I don't want to swear, but you know, we're in the shit. Basically, that's what a lot of people seem to think. And I don't know how true that is, but you know, by the look of Tony's ears face, you know, I can't see that being untrue. You know, the way that we handle our business in January and in September, and people forget, you know, as much as people want to laugh about us being this side that spends too much money, we did in the first season. Absolutely, we did, right? But in that second season, we spent barely anything. You know, we were run on a shoestring. We had all these players in on loan. And it scares me. It scares me the fact that we didn't spend anything last season, because it makes me wonder whether we actually have anything now. And as much as people want to go on about youth and exuberance and you know, bringing in the players from the academy, right? As far as I'm concerned, even the academy players bottled it at the end of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, what makes you think that they're gonna? I mean, I know that's harsh because they're all young, right? But they did. They bottled the final at the end of the season. What makes you think that they're going to be able to come into the team and put in a positive mentality? I don't know. Right? Andre Green, Rashaan Hepburn Murphy, as good as they are, like whenever we have seen them play for Villa, have they stamped their names? Have they stamped their names down? Have they given a reason for anybody to think they should get picked? Hardly.
No, I think. I think it's harsh. You're certainly right. It's just you can't just chuck all these youth players into the first team picture and expect them to win against seasoned veterans. I mean, you can say all you want about Alan Hansen, and you know you don't win anything with kids. When Manchester United, with you know the class of '93, lost against Aston Villa, but this isn't David Beckham, Nicky Butt, four scores, Gary Neville, Phil Neville. It's Callum O'Hare, Russian Hepburn Murphy, Jack Dalhaes, Mataji Sarkic and others. And I think they're quality. I think they certainly have every right and every opportunity, they will have every opportunity to become Villa greats. But to chuck them all into the fire when you're desperate, this is next season, promotion's a must. To chuck them all into that battle, it's not going to end well.
Last time that happened, we capitulated. Do you remember that season when basically we threw in Baker, Clark, Albrighton and Bannon? It never worked. Just they didn't work well with each other, but that's because they didn't have anybody else around them. Didn't have any good quality seasoned veterans around them. Now we talk about the spine of the team. Terry's going to be gone. Johnston's going to be gone. Snodgrass is going to be gone. Who's going to be the leaders? Who's going to step up there? You know.
Yeah, essentially you've got Jack Grealish and James Chester as the most senior players, and even they aren't guaranteed to be in this team.
That's the thing. They're the ones who we might have to sell. And I'm sorry, but if we sell Jack Grealish and James Chester, I do not envisage us challenging for the playoffs. Just won't happen. It won't happen. We need the talent in our side, and I don't know where it's going to come from. That's why I'm so worried.
So a bit more on financial fair play then. Alex Carson on the 7500 Holt wrote he busted out two articles today, mate. Two pretty lengthy articles, so a fair play to him. About financial fair play and about where Villa go from here, and I think they are both worth your time. So the first one was about Aston Villa. They'll have to face a music for reckless spending. And their spending has been completely that reckless, mate. You can say what you want, but Villa plan for every situation but the one they're in now. And that's scary. And I do think Wynas and Shaw, for the most part, have done good jobs, but we're in a position now where we suddenly have to rebuild and we've got no resources to do that.
I really need the club to come out with a statement to suggest everything's going to be okay, but yeah. Yeah, where is the resources going to come from?
Because you look at the fees of Ross McCormack, and that's a worry in itself, because transfer fees aren't instant. They're spread over years. You know, you pay 15 million, it might be three million over 5 years. So you're still paying that off. It's not that though, mate. It's the wages. You may have got Jedinak for 4 million, but you're paying him 2 million a year. You know, you may have got John Terry for nothing, but you're paying him millions. Jack Grealish, you know, he's on peanuts compared to these players. Henry Lansbury, you may have got him on the cheap, but you're paying him a lot of money not to play. And these are terrible decisions. And these are decisions that are now going to define the club, because you didn't even use these players in the player final. You had Kodja, he didn't come on. You had Hogan, he didn't come on until late. Kodja and Hogan, sorry, didn't come on until late. You had Lansbury, he didn't come on. Ross McCormack obviously wasn't anywhere near the team.
But there's attitude problems here, isn't there? Right? Ross McCormack was ridiculously expensive. You'd think we'd try to integrate him into the side and see if we can make it work. It just never... him and Bruce, you know, as soon as they clashed heads, it wasn't going to happen. Okay, fine. Right, but now we've got a player who we spent 20 million quid on or something like that, and he's just sat there. This is a championship, you know? We spent all that money. Right, it's a ridiculous amount of money in the championship, and we've wasted it, right? And then Kodja and Hogan, say what you like, neither of them have been good enough. And Kodja, obviously, in his first season was fine, right? He came back from injury, and we said, okay, we're going to have to give him time. He's going to need to have a preseason. But James, he hasn't scored a single goal since coming back. He hasn't scored a single goal, and he hasn't looked like scoring. If you want a striker to come off the bench, they're supposed to do something. They're supposed to be there to make a difference. And he hasn't made a difference in a single game, James. Like, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know how you can kind of go two ways about it. Scott Hogan, tremendous attitude. You know, say what you like about the guy. He's done well for himself, and he did well to get back into the team, you know, after you know he'd been frozen out for a long time. But guess what happened with him? Another player who needs his confidence, right? As soon as things stopped going our way, he didn't pull us out of it. He couldn't pull us out of it, and we had to call on Hogan. We had to call on Grabban. So we've spent all this money on players, but what have we got to show for it? Nothing at the end of the day.
The difficulty for me is considering the decision. I think you can go back now and you can sum up our financial fair play fears through one move, and that's the move to sign either Jonathan Codger or Ross McCormack, because you spent... Darren Bent's our record signing. After that, it's Ross McCormack. Darren Bent cost us $9 on $22 million. Ross McCormack, it would go up to $15 million. That makes him second place. And I think third, fourth, Scott Hogan, Angel, Juan Pablo Angel, of course, and Jonathan Codger. So you look at all these and you think, why did Villa sign Codger if they were signing Ross McCormack? And why did Villa sign Ross McCormack if they were scouting Codger? What's more, why didn't Villa sign Scott Hogan in that summer and not sign two other players? It baffles me, mate. They say a lot about, you know, and I do think this regime is good. I think they have had the right ideas. I just don't think they've been executed that well at all. I think they've been rushed through, and it'd be hard for me to say I'd do a better job, and I wouldn't. But it strikes me as being a really terrible idea to have done that. Especially, I know you say what you want. You had Kozak and Abanlahor and Hepburn Murphy on the bench. You didn't have to spend $30 million on two strikers who you can, when you can only play one.
Do you know what? One thing that I've always hated about this club. I love Villa, by the way. Yeah. One thing I've always hated is we always seem to waste players. We always seem to waste everything. Right. Mark Albrighton was one of the first examples of it. You know, you have a tremendous player there who you should be playing for England. And we let him go for free, right? We had guys like Libor Kozak, Rudy Gisted. You know, they were good, solid championship strikers. Ended up, you know, just being thrown away to the wayside. And we end up spending ridiculous amounts of play. Look, just because a striker has done well at a particular club in the championship does not mean he's going to come over here and start banging in goals. That's not the way it works. Especially not if you don't improve the creative players around him. And I like our midfield, right? We've got we do have some good players in the team, but I mean, what the thing I was worried about was the fact that we don't have anybody as cover for Adoma and Snodgrass, and we don't have another option, you know, apart from them. And you know, we almost can't seem to work well as a creative unit, and so the strikers don't get the opportunities, and as a result, they don't end up scoring, and as a result, they lose confidence and never get back to the same level as we wanted them to. And I just feel as though, you know, you're never going to get the most out of a striker unless, you know, you intend to play him every single game. And you can't have three players like that. You can't have three strikers who are supposed to be your marquee players. It just isn't going to work.
Yeah, very gutted at how everything's turned out, because his decision, mate, it could turn out well. It could turn out that, you know, we get a sell on free from the Adama sale or the Veretout sale, two players who have performed well that look to be moving on. And you might just have to get rid of one of your strikers. It could be like that. Or the other thing is, it could be that you have to remove a massive portion of your squad to cover losses. And not many people actually understand financial fair play. It's not just about spending what you earn. It's also about covering the massive losses you've incurred in running this football club. And these losses are quite big. Keith Wyness himself said it would be challenging if the CEO, who you'd think would be trying to pull the wool over everyone's eyes, you know, is saying it would be challenging, then it's not just a case of getting a few quid or raising a GoFundMe. It is a case of, oh, holy hell, back to square. You know, we'd be beyond going back to square one, mate. We'd be going back to ground zero, and we'd have to rebuild again with no resources, and that's worrying. We're a season away from being Nottingham Forest, Leeds United or Sheffield Wednesday, three massive clubs with massive history, with a big stadium, being stuck. We're a season away not from being a fallen Premier League club. We're a season away now from becoming a Championship also run.
But you know, yes, I think the weekend was the icing on the cake, I'm so upset and I'm so angry at the players, and I know I shouldn't be. I know logically, right? You can't have a go at them, but like, yeah, I just feel as though the passion that the fans had and the want and the craving that we had for promotion to get back in the Premier League, it just wasn't matched by them. And they didn't even look that upset at the end of the game. You know, I'm just looking at it and thinking Snodgrass goes back to West Ham. Johnston goes back to Man United. And by the way, I'm not saying these guys didn't put any effort in whatsoever. But like, what I'm saying is, and I just want to clarify, is that that extra drive, right, to know that this game is supposed to mean a lot to them, right, and that this game is going to define them and send them back to the Premier League, it's not the same as it was at Fulham. Because at Fulham, all these players are a team, they're all together, and you know, this is the chance that they needed. This is the big chance for them to get back up. For us, it just wasn't the same because, yeah, a lot of these players know they're not going to be here next season. And I think that's always going to stay in the back of their mind. I was just sad, man. I was just disappointed with it. I'm just disappointed with the attitude on show, especially because that first half was utter tripe in comparison to the second. And it's a shame that it all rested on one game, but I don't know if it's worth us speculating on financial fair play at the moment. I don't think we know the full details.
No, of course. I think we'll get into questions in a minute then. I think we've covered, you know, there's not much more we can say about the Fulham game or financial fair play, but we'll come on to some questions that, so, you know, you've gratefully given us. I just wanted to thank a few people. And firstly, mate, I'd like to thank you for being my co-host throughout what has amounted to potentially to be a glorious season. I think we've had our downs, especially recently, but we've had more positives to speak about than negatives. And I think that's a turning point almost. We'll see if it fully resets, but I'm hoping for much more. So thank you for joining me through this season, mate. Just like to get that done on air.
Thanks for bringing me out on here.
No problem, man. Of course, I'd like to thank at Trevor Says, I'm sure you will be as well, for being our executive producer, I guess, throughout the season and hammering on at us about predictions and stuff. And of course, asking us a few questions, and he's pretty much been involved with the show a lot. So thank you at Trevor Hood. At Trevor Says. Thank you very much, mate. Any thoughts on that predictions game he's been running?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, it's great, the fact that I won it, and I won it so dominantly. it just doesn't feel like much of a victory right now. But I suppose it's a consolation, and I'll take it. I expect the trophy soon. You can deliver it to me in Salford, Trevor. I'm awaiting it.
Fair play. And of course, the gang at 7,500 to Holt, you've provided us with talking points and their expertise on a number of issues, including drinking in Washington, D.C., the Indianapolis 500, among other things. I've been taught how to read into football statistics and how to write better. So thanks to everyone there. And of course, Phil Vogel. To name one who has joined us a few times this season in your stead. Of course, I think it was when you were interviewing for your big job. So he jumped in your stead to cover a few games. So yeah, and anyone who listens, of course, the Villa View crew, Dan Bardell and Dan Rollinson, who have been friends to the show and friends to us personally.
Absolutely.
And Matt Lynch, who's come on in your stead as well. Mm. So of course, yeah, we couldn't go without thanking him. So, yeah, thanks to everyone who's been listening so far this season. I didn't want to do it at the end of the show. I wanted to do it before the main event, and that is the final questions of this season. We haven't run them in a long time, simply because we haven't stopped speaking. No. But I thought it'd be good to get into some questions. You ready, mate?
Yeah, go for it.
Good. First one, mate, is from that man, Dan Rollinson, at Dan Rollinson, the founder of The Villa View. He wants three words to describe your day. Today, I guess. His answer was moping at home. I think that's pretty relevant. Three words to describe your day?
Tired and hungry. That's what I'm going to say. I just want to mention that it's 8 p.m. now. No, it's not 8 p.m. It's about half 10 now, isn't it? Right. Last night, basically because of Ramadan and because of my schedule, right, I work early mornings, basically, and I stay up during the night so I can eat, and basically I sleep during the afternoon. Because of the playoff final yesterday, I basically didn't get any sleep because I had to stay up during the afternoon, and I went into work in the morning tired, having not slept at all, and basically trying to avoid any conversation about Aston Villa. So my day was tired and hungry. I'm better now, of course, having slept and eaten, but yeah, thank you, Villa.
Yeah, I guess my three words would be, it actually hurts. It's a physical pain. This is so. Yeah, thanks, Dana, for giving us those questions and making us face our darkest, innermost feelings. Tyler Dam, American outlaw himself. With financial fair play looming, name one high-profile player you'd be okay with selling, and one who isn't Jack Grealish that you'd try to keep at all costs.
High profile. That's an interesting one. Ross McCormack. He's high profile, isn't he?
He fits the bill. Yeah, I'll take that. No, answer the question properly, mate. Come on. You know what he means.
Okay.
So I guess you've got Adoma, Andre Green, Jack Grealish, James Chester.
You know what? If we can get a lot of money out of him, if we can get a lot of money for him, I think Adoma. Don't get me wrong. I think he's done well for us this season. I think he's been brilliant. He's actually been one of our best players. But I think we need to bring in some younger wingers now. I genuinely think so. And I think I'd rather, if we're looking at the players on players around, I wouldn't sell any defenders. That's come back to bite us before. If we can get a good amount of money for Albert Adoma and replace him with a couple of decent championship wingers, I think it'd be better.
Yeah, I'll go for Albert Adoma as well, because I think Andre Green is a left winger. He'll fit naturally on that side, ready for next season. He was starting this season, let's not forget, in glorious form until he got injured twice. So yeah, I think I'll go with Albert Adoma. And I wouldn't want that to happen, because I think he's been great. And I know he ran off the ball at the end, but a big part of why we were able to finish in the playoff position is because he dragged us there for the first half of the season, to be blunt. And one you'll try to keep at all costs. I'll go first, mate. James Chester, without a doubt.
Yeah, 100% it's James Chester. 100% it's James Chester. I think I said to the Fulham blog that interviewed me the other day, the Hamien, that James Chester's really an unsung hero. You know, for all that John Terry's done, I think James Chester's covered his back a lot this season. I think James Chester's a Premier League standard centre-back, 100%. You know, he'd fit right in at a mid-table team. And he has rescued us at so many points this season. You know, despite the fact I think he could have been better in the playoff final, you know, that goes for everybody else as well. I just think that for the first time in years, we've got a solid centre-back who is sticking with us and is basically staying in our team, you know, and basically a centre-back that you can see sticking around for more than a couple of years, one that isn't Kieran Clark.
No, I think James Chester, very underrated player, and I've no... Do you know when these clubs were circling Johnny Evans? He's a good defender at West Brom, but I've no idea why they weren't looking at James Chester for 50 million less. It's... he wasn't playing in the Premier League, but regardless, I think James Chester would fit into most teams, mate. You know, there'd only be a few that he actually wouldn't fit into.
He's a very orthodox centre back as well, isn't he? You know, he's pretty much, you know, incredibly well rounded, isn't he? He's good on the floor, and he's good, you know, when it comes to corners. He's good at set pieces as well. You know, he's very much your if you were to create like a perfect mold of a centre back. He fits the bill there, basically. And he can play a decent pass as well. And I think the best thing about James Chester is doesn't seem to be making dodgy errors all the time.
No, I agree. I think he's really classy, and it'll be a shame to lose him. Tyler's got a second question. Who do you see being more important next season? Is it Keenan Davis or Andre Green?
Andre Green. It's going to be Andre Green. Keenan Davis, I like him. I think he'll be a good option, hopefully, for us off the bench. And, you know, hopefully we get to see him start more as well. But is he going to fire us into the Premier League? I don't think so. He's a good player. And, you know, next season will be a big season for him. Andre Green, the reason why I say him is that, you know, whilst I did say earlier, you know, he hasn't shown enough to say that he's going to be consistent for us. There is a chance, I think, that he does show up next season. And if he does, then if we can get him and Grealish playing alongside each other, you can imagine him and Onuma linking up quite well as well. If he does, then he could be important to us because we don't have enough wingers. And Snodgrass is going to be going back to West Ham. I doubt we're going to get him back. I don't know who we're going to bring in to replace him. And also, we need somebody who's going to offer something different to what we've currently got, because it seems to me that Adoma and Snodgrass played the whole season together on the left and right wing as 30-year-olds. And I, you know, we need to start bringing some more youth and pace into the side.
Yeah, I think I'll go for Andre Green as well. I think Keenan Davis excelled for us in the early stages of the season. Then again, it ran away from him in the second half. He didn't get his regular football and he was brought in a bit part role. So I think Andre Green, because these wings are going to be essential, mate, coming up. Tom Jones at Not a Welsh Singer. A bit disappointed there. I thought he was the actual Tom Jones. Simple one. Would you keep Steve Bruce or move on? And this is a talking point that I was going to bring to you before questions. But since we had a question about it, we're going to answer it now. It's hard, mate. Every single manager I'd hire instead of Bruce has massive flaws. I think I've seen Oscar Garcia bandied around. He's a good manager. Do I think he'll punch Jack Grealish in the head and lay out James Chester? I think he would. Not through his own fault, but he could bring toxicity back in the dressing room. Dean Smith, he hasn't had a job as big as this and he hasn't finished very high with Brentford. He's punched above his weight, but Villa's not a club that needs to be punching above its weight and needs to be finishing up there. It's hard. They all have flaws. Steve Bruce, of course, has his flaws, and anyone you hire in to replace him, you're not going to get Mikel Arteta, you're not going to get Patrick Vieira, they're too big for this job.
Why, yeah, but why would I want them, man? Like, this is the thing, right? Derby are out here looking for Frank Lampard as manager. Why are you bringing in Frank Lampard, right? You haven't been able to get in the Premier League, you haven't been able to break into it for years and years and years, right? And it's because the players seem to bottle it at the last second. Right, bringing in good orthodox managers has been good for them. You know, why bring in somebody with no experience at the management game? What makes you think that he's gonna take you up there? So, you know, forget all these Mikel Arteta, Patrick Vieira type managers. Right, for what it's worth, Patrick Vieira at New York City, he's had quite a bit of money. I don't think he's done well enough over there. All right, you know, these guys were linked to the Arsenal job because they're ex players. I do like the idea of giving young managers a chance, but they only really work at teams where, you know, there isn't a mess to sort out. Right now, you need an experienced head, right? The club has been dealing with these issues for a couple of years, right? Like it or not, Steve Bruce has improved Aston Villa since he came in. Now, the question as to whether or not he should stick around is all dependent really to me on what the players think of him and whether the players are gonna play for him. If he has the players' support, you keep him around, because regardless of what's going to happen with financial fair play, no other manager is going to understand the situation as well as Steve Bruce. So that's one thing, right? I do genuinely think if we keep him around, we're better off than trying to brand around some sort of, you know, sexy European manager that we think is going to do something different. There's nothing to me that suggests that bringing in another manager is going to have a positive effect. I do not see it personally. Let Steve Bruce carry on the job that he's doing. Yes, it was a poor end to the season. Yes, his football might not be the greatest at times. But having said that, I feel like he's the only manager really who's poised to deal with the situation that's coming ahead.
No, I have to agree. I think he has got his flaws. I think they're glaring. But when you consider the other question, who do you hire now? We got problems, mate. We got problems. I mean, we need the steady hand. And, you know, if that means keeping Bruce, it has to mean keeping Bruce. We are in a position now where we can't be picky. And we're going to have to find a hell of a manager, a hell of a gem to replace him if we are. Because, you know, no more. We can't afford another half measure. You can't afford to hire a manager and it not work out.
Yeah, yeah.
To either stick with Bruce, who's going to possibly get you fourth or fifth and another chance, or you hire a manager like Garcia or Smith. You could finish first with, but it's no guarantee. Yeah, you know, there's no guarantee that you don't finish out them playoff spots.
Well, you just don't know, do you? You just don't know. And the other thing we don't know is how well these kinds of managers, you know, do in the transfer market, especially considering what's about to happen. And I trust Steve Bruce with this now. I trust him better than I trust anybody else. Tactically, perhaps he might not be great, but why not bring in another coach? You know, that's the kind of thing that helps that kind of thing out. You know, I think people think that a manager is a be all and end all at a club. I don't think that's true. And I think we're better off just waiting, you know, and, there's no point sacking him before the start of the season. You know, see what happens next season. See what you can do. But remember that this club, I mean, this is something to mention, actually, right? whilst we're being real, remember that this club was an absolute mess when he came in. Those players were an absolute mess. They were nervous wrecks. They could not get a job done whatsoever. They couldn't. You know, it seemed like we would never be able to pull out a goal from anywhere. It seemed like any time our defence got challenged, they broke, they fell apart. Vestiges of that were still around on that Champions League final, on that playoff final that we were in. You know, we saw that attitude creep back in. But Steve Bruce managed to eradicate most of it. And he's the first manager that's been able to get rid of all of those attitude problems at our club since Tim Sherwood did for about the length of about 2 months.
Yeah, no, I have to agree there, mate. It's going to be a hard question, one we can't really answer. But we'll move on. At Trevor says, of course, that man Trevor Hood has a question. All things considered, how's morale? Morale over at the blog and in the podcast at 7500 Tolt. On the blog, it's all right. I think we're prepared for all situations. I think Alex Carson on the site has it covered with two excellent articles I've mentioned. But our morale, I think we're a bit deflated.
We have some exciting plans for the whole cast, and you know we still will, you know. And I think it's just a case of we really hope that you know we'll be able to find some positivity before the start of the next season. I hope that we're not going to be hammering on about financial fair play. I hope the stories are going to be positive, you know, in the people that we're looking at signing. I hope that's what we're going to be. I hope that's what we're going to be talking about. I just don't want this to turn into another here we go again. With that we had under Doug Ellis.
Declan O'Donoghue, long time fan of the podcast, long time listener, at Decamoto on Twitter. As a fan, excluding the benefits to the club of promotion, do you think it's more fun supporting Villa in the Premiership or Championship? Declan himself has found this season to be one of his favourites, mate, and he's been following the team since the 90s. So, no, I agree. The league is fantastic in itself. It's the fact that there's such massive consequences for not escaping it. It's almost like football in purgatory. You go and visit and see all these fantastic things like, you know, Dante's fucking circle of hell, where you see all these things that have gone on and what's happened and all these past relics and all these broken empires. And then you realise, hang on, actually, we've got to get out of here. It's not the best place for us to be, because what happens, mate, is the league puts restrictions on the money in and out, and it's for good reason. But it's if you get relegated, the rule shouldn't be that after three seasons you've got to cut your arm off. So, you know, I love us. I love it. The Championship. I think it's a great league. I think it has amazing results and some excellent dynamics going on. But the consequences of not going out are not. It's just terrible.
You are in the Premiership. As far as I'm concerned, we were pretty much in the Championship. You know, as soon as 2011 hit, basically, you know, the team were already morally in the Championship. They had no ambition from that point. And I think that's why, you know, it was so poor seeing the team, watching the team in the Premiership. I think when you see the team play with a bit of positivity and actually have a goal in mind and actually, you know, try to achieve something, I think that's why the season's been different for you. You know, as deflating as the end of the season has been, you know, for large parts of the club, they had a positive attitude. You know, they had an idea of where they wanted to be. You know, when we were under Randy Lerner, by the way, I mentioned Doug Ellis earlier. I meant to say Randy Lerner, by the way. Let me just put that out there. We were surviving for the sake of surviving. We were there essentially so that Randy Lerner wouldn't get bankrupt, almost to that point. We were there, you know, just existing. Now under Tony Zia, we do seem to be trying to get back in the Premier League. I mean, we've done an absolutely dog's dinner job of it, right? But I think that's why you've enjoyed the season more.
Just breaking, mate, is that take it as you will. It's from the Daily Mail. But Steve Bruce's position is uncertain at Aston Villa. I think we all knew that anyway, but it's worth talking about. And it is believed that John Terry will actually leave the club. I think it was thought that there would be some workaround and that the club would find a way to bring him on, whether it was as a player coach or even player manager. It's not happening. He's told his Villa teammates in college to keep in touch, which is end of an era there, live.
You came in to do a job. Right. And he did well as a leader for the most part of it. But, you know, when it came down to it, when it came down to the wire, Were him and the other leader figures able to keep their bottle? No, they weren't. Now, I think James Chester can take what John Terry's done at the club and move forward with it. I don't think anybody expected John Terry to stick around in the Championship. So, you know, it is what it is. And I think this season really proved that. I actually think that he did really well this season. I'm not going to lie, right? But I think that playoff final was the nail in the head, basically, wasn't it? Because it showed that he can no longer do it under pressure, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to another question. The Claret and View, the award-nominated Aston Villa blog that's come onto the scene recently, run by Regan Foy, Claret and View, at Claret and View on Twitter, I should add. He wants to know personally, do you think Villa's new approach towards marketing across social media and everything they've done has had a positive effect on the fan base? I think, yeah. I think for the most part, it's been very good. Sometimes I've been a bit dry. I think some of the video content's been a bit lackluster. It seems to be a bit iMovie produced, and I think they do need some fresh blood in that department, or some additions at least, because it's not going to affect financial fair play bringing on some marketing staff. But the branding, I think everything's been cool, and it has made me feel, you know, quote unquote, hashtag part of the pride. It's been all inclusive, and I think they've done a good job, all things being said.
Yeah, no, I think they've done a tremendous job online. I think they've done a good job of making the players seem a lot more a lot more relatable. You know, they've put out some good videos, some good content. It's basically modernized Villa, which is good. You know, that's the sort of approach we need to be taking, really. And we don't want to be seen as this old sort of old fashioned traditional club that can't have a bit of fun. All things said, I wish we had a little bit less fun near the end of the season when things got serious. But all in all, I think the social media marketing has been really good.
We're going to finish up with a final question from Paperwork Ninja. That's at Paperwork Ninja. And this is because the other two questions we've had are quite financial fair play based. And I think can't bear thinking about that. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. This question is a bit, but Paperwork Ninja wants to know, can we keep Grealish for next season? But more importantly, if we can't, which team signs him?
Wow, really? Wolves.
I think there's a strong chance that it's either a top four club who puts him in the under 23 team, or it's one of Leicester or Burnley.
Yeah, Leicester have done it before, haven't they? I think to be honest, the club that should sign him, really, who should be looking at him right now, is Everton. Personally, if I'm Everton, I'm looking at him and thinking, right, we haven't got Barkley anymore. Rooney's gone. We need a decent attacking midfielder. We need somebody who's going to make this team a little bit more positive, because Everton, you know, have had a reputation this season for being a little bit lackadaisical. Player like Grealish seriously improves that side. But yeah, Leicester, he'd work well in as well, especially if when they play. Sometimes they play with the 4-1, don't they? You know, they go with that sometimes, and I think Grealish should work well in that midfield as well. But yeah, if I'm Everton, I'd be looking at him.
What you've got to think about as well, I think of Liverpool as well, and I think of Adam Lallana's getting it on a bit. I think that Coutinho's gone, and I look and I think Jack Grealish wouldn't cost us that much money relatively to what we'd spend. You know, we spend 70 million on Van Dijk. Grealish will cost us upwards of 20, 30 million. I'll take that chance.
We have never got what our players are worth. We have never got it.
I think Milner was close. 28 million plus a player. That's all right.
That just really, really like that. That was basically, it made us look like an absolute cock of a club. Basically, it's like, yeah, here you go, have what you want. No, it was really, really cocky of the club, right? Like, it was like, yeah, you know what, go for it, 9 million, it is what it is. I know we had a release clause on it, but you know, that was stupid in the first place, right? Benteke as well, at the time, should have been worth more than he was. I think it was 30 million, wasn't it, we sold him for?
Yeah, 32 thereabouts.
Okay, that's fair enough. Okay, 32 million, that's fair enough, it is what it is.
32 million more.
Yeah, true. You know, I'd have got, you know, I'd have been looking at 35, 40 million for him, really. you know, at the time.
That's Football Manager talk coming in now from you, isn't it? If you're AC Milan side, someone bids for your, one of your players and you improve the bid to 35 million and someone, they knock it down to 32. You're like, yeah, okay, man. Yeah, that's higher than 30. I'll take that.
No, but, you know, I'm being serious. Like, we our players never seem to go for what they're worth. And I think the same thing's going to happen with Jack Grealish. I genuinely foresee us waiting for too long. Right, waiting for him to run out his contract, perhaps, and even leaving on a free. I don't know if that will happen, but it's a possibility. Or I can see us. I bet you, if Jack Grealish leaves, it will be for a sum of like 14 million.
What's your market value for Jack Grealish then?
30-35.
I think that's a fair price.
I think that is what he's worth. You know, he's one of England under 23 star players. And you know, as much as people don't realize it and fans of other clubs don't realize it, Jack Grealish is the real deal. You know, he means a lot to us as a club. And he's worth more than that. He's worth more than 14, 15 million. He's just, it wouldn't be fair if we didn't get anything more than that for him.
I think it's similar to Benteke and Dalph and Milner. Because these players have meaning. They weren't Ashley Young or Stuart Downing who come in and, you know, they're excellent players. But, you know, you had Milner, Dalph, Barry, and Benteke, who transcended, you know, that they had this, you know, you had meaning behind them. And Grealish has got that. And not many players have that. You know, James Chester's one who's earned that. But Jack Grealish, it's even more because he's come through the youth academy. It's almost like Gabby 10 years ago when Arsenal and Everton and all that were chasing him. But more, like times 10. It's scary because you are going to lose Jack Grealish because I don't see Villa will have... It's going to be a fight next season. And Jack Grealish isn't going to go for market value.
He's not. He's going to go for about 14 million, right? I could make a bet on it right now. It will be under 15 million that he leaves for.
Don't get me wrong. That saves Villa if their financial fair play restrictions are bad, and I'm grateful for that. But it shouldn't. There shouldn't be a league rule that enforces the selling of your best player. That enforces it when you can afford it. If everything's well at Villa, and Tony Shaw, he says he is, Villa can afford this. It's just the fact that we have to cover losses, and losses are natural in football. Especially if you're a massive Premier League club. Every Premier League club is massive, but if you're Aston Villa, you're coming down from a top six perspective. You're paying top six rates for players. You come down and you're suddenly forced to cut your arms and legs off and sell your best players and fall in line with the rest, and that's not right.
No.
But it's sad. We're losing so many players. We essentially may lose Jack Grealish. I think we'll have him for one more season. Then it's a worry. And I think we'll end on that note, mate. You know, don't bear thinking about it. But I'm hoping for a positive off-season. And I hope all things go well. And what's more, I hope that we have something positive to speak about, because it's not. I don't want to be negative. But I'm very deflated. A lot of news coming out isn't great. And people need answers. Everyone needs answers. And there's a lot of players posting statements on Instagram that look a lot like leaving statements. So we'll have to really just wait on that. And we'll be back next week, I guess. Any final thoughts?
I just want to say that, you know, we showed a lot of promise this season. We clearly were a side that could have challenged for second place. But I'm really disappointed that we bottled it, basically. And I'm disappointed that we bottled it in the playoff final as well. I still can't understand how we produced what we did in the first half when we played so much better in the second. And I think a lot of these players need to take a good hard look at themselves. And, you know, basically, if they are sticking around next season, need to do a lot better. I think Steve Bruce is going to be taking a lot of blame for what's gone on this season. But at the end of the day, from where I'm standing, you know, all the players need to look at themselves after that playoff final. But hey ho, you know, we've shown promise. We've shown signs of being a good side, and we need to improve next season, whether it's with less resources or with more.
It's going to be tough, mate. It's going to be really tough. And thank you very much for joining me today. And we'll be back next Sunday. You can follow him at DH Raza. Find me at Gemma Rushton. Find us at 7500 Holt, and we'll listen to your criticism across Twitter, across all platforms. You can leave us a review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast. And we'll see you next Sunday. Thank you very much, and goodbye.